In a tower by the river, there lived a man.
Castle.
There was a man who took a stand. With pen and paper in his hand, defeating foes in every ward, with a pen more mighty than the sword. No escape from his ink lasso, in a tower by the river, Castle.
Here's how you get him. He pulls a knife, you pull a gun. He sends one of yours to the hospital, you send one of his to the morgue. That's the Chicago way.
Well, everybody, this is John Cass from the Chicago Tribune, columnist, editorial board member, Orthodox Christian, husband, father, really, first thing is husband and father, and everything else follows. And Jeff Carlin, executive producer of WGN Radio. Jeff, an amazing thing happened after our last guest, David Marcus, was on the air with us doing the Chicago Way, talking about why is CNN not covering Cuomo?
Right, yeah.
He went to the Conservative Political Action Committee headquarters or convention.
You were here first.
Yeah. And he carried that theme, Blue Box Dave, at Blue Box Dave, carried that theme into a confrontation with none other than Jim Acosta. Now, the thing that amazed me, Jeff, was that CNN, with all its difficulties, all the BS that it does about Cuomo, carrying Cuomo's water, and all that, would even send a guy like Acosta to that convention. Why would they do that? That's probably like sending me to the Hillary Clinton Love Fest in Park Ridge, you know?
Right. Yeah. Well, that's why we sent. I mean, come on. We in the world of clickbait and headlines and ratings, we know what CNN's doing. They sent the bright, shiny lightning rod that is Jim Acosta and sent him to where everybody knows him. Everybody's going to have some sort of reaction to him. And they knew exactly what they're doing. We call that sweeps in the business.
Well, he was there to trigger conservatives who he's been trashing for years. And guess what? Blue Box Dave got up in his face.
Right.
I liked it.
Someone who's very well read. Got in his face, and he had a lot of this to say to him.
Claim that he won the election.
Hey, Jim, I'm Dave Marcus from The Federalist. When are you guys going to start covering Cuomo?
Conducting an interview.
When are you guys going to start covering Cuomo?
We do.
No, I'm asking you a serious question.
We do, but David,
no, you don't. No, you don't. No, you don't.
We do. We have.
No, you don't. He killed 10,000 people. And he's accused of sexual assault.
Let me just finish.
And you guys want to talk about Ted Cruz.
If you don't mind.
So when? No. When
you don't mind,
when are you going to start covering
Cuomo? This interview.
We can do it this way, maybe. Just because he's rude, I'll be rude.
Sir, so let me just finish this interview, and then I'll talk to you, okay? If you don't mind.
What do you mean, no?
I mean, no.
Well, then, excuse me. I have an interview.
Yeah, what are you going to box me out? You're not tall enough. When are you going to start covering it, Jim?
So
when's CNN going to deal with Cuomo?
We are covering it. I don't know.
No, you're not. No, you're not. You're not.
Well.
You're not.
Okay, well, you agree to disagree.
No, we don't agree to disagree. You're not covering Cuomo.
I'm sorry, but...
Well, what do you think about what do you think about it? What do you have to say about Cuomo?
I'm here to do a job right now.
I'm not here
to talk to you.
You have plenty to say about Trump. Nothing to say about Cuomo?
I'm here to do a job.
What do you have to say about Cuomo? Nothing? Nothing, right? You have nothing to say about Andrew Cuomo. The emperor of New York, and you have nothing to say. Okay. Then we see it. Then we see it.
At least you don't rat on your friends.
Then we see it. Yeah, that's good. That's good. At least you're loyal.
And when I heard that, I texted him and tweeted him saying, bravo, Blue Box Dave. I just liked it. Going up after that guy. Not that I'm all into confrontation. I'm really kind of a coward. I really don't do anything but tremble in my safe space. But I did enjoy it. And you know what else we're going to enjoy? Our next guest.
Oh, we will. But before we get to our next guest, who is worth the wait, I will say that I do appreciate Dave's, what he was doing there. And to defend Acosta, only because I know the game is clicks and viewership and all that stuff, that I do appreciate him going there versus, like, back in the day, or even I'm sure they do it now, but the types of, like, The Daily Show, where they send some innocuous, nondescript correspondent, and I've got air quotes around them, to go and, like, ask you know, trigger questions of random set of people at CPAC or like the DNC, and then they get caught not realizing what they're being a part of, thinking it's like, oh, well, they're just documenting my reaction to as a person, and really they're just asking them to make a fool of themselves for their audience. I do appreciate that Costa, at least everybody knows who he is. He's not going to sneak up on anybody. He's not going to get anybody like, hey, how do you feel? You know, he's not going to ask somebody some weirdly twisted logical question and use it to make fun of them. So to that extent, I will give him a little bit of credo.
I will give him props for that. And I also give, but he's there to promote his brand. He's not there to bring insight or analysis.
No, by no means.
And I have to say that based on my reading of David Marcus, who's an excellent columnist, he is bringing insight and analysis to things. As you
perspective,
know,
really. I mean, I think we overuse the term insight analysis because we have too many intellectuals and quote unquote experts on stuff. I appreciate when people bring perspective, and being somebody like himself, being out in the crowd, but who is actually in the know and technically part of the quote unquote media, bringing it a foil to someone like an Acosta in real time, I think is really valuable. And it goes both ways.
It would be ironic, although the thing is, irony is dead. It died in the 90s, I was told, and hasn't come back. But I don't know what you could say about a massive political corruption investigation run by the feds, rolling from Chicago all the way to Springfield, toppling different people, Boss Madigan, for example, Mike Madigan, washing out the some aldermen and state reps and senators, creating the rise of the new political power in the vacuum, which are the public sector unions like CTU and service employees, etc., AFSCME. And it all starts, or at least some of it starts, with a little blue pill. The little blue pill of Viagra brought to Danny Solis, who liked to go to the massage parlors. Alderman Solis has his issues. He was caught on federal tape talking about Viagra and wanting to go to the massage parlor, and he hoped that there would be Asian girls. And I thought it was rather unfortunate, but he cracked and jumped right onto the federal bus, wired up. And if there's anybody who knows about that story, it's the Chicago Tribune's federal reporter, my good friend, and also somewhat of a famed cook as well in his own rights, Jason Meisner. Hey, Jace.
Hey, John.
That was a mouthful, huh? So what is there any irony in this? Is irony dead or what? A blue pill, and now you have a massive federal investigation?
Yeah, it did. That was part of the beginning of this whole thing. Although the actual beginning, as far as we know it, was a real estate developer in Chinatown who got in trouble and flipped and started recording Danny Solis. But yeah, Solis's troubles really began when the Fed staked out that massage parlor and were recording his calls. And as far as we know, approached him at some point saying, you know, we got you doing any number of illegal things. And then he flipped, and then Ed Burke went down, and then the rest is, well, so far history isn't done yet, but that's how it started.
The blue pill thing. I have to examine this because you've written about the man who brought the Viagra to Danny Solis, Roberto Caldero, a guy I've known or knew years ago at City Hall. I wrote a column about it where I talked to Franny Spielman and Bill Cameron, who remember him as I do, you know, an aide, a close aide to a Louis Gutierrez guy, close aide to Louis Gutierrez. How does he fit in all this?
Yeah, Roberto Caldero is kind of in the middle of the whole Solis investigation, although he was never charged with the Viagra, what we were just talking about.
Well, Viagra is not illegal.
So, yeah, there's nothing illegal. He's actually you know, he's a talkative guy. I've talked to him many times. That's what he says. There's nothing wrong with it. He's known Danny for 40 years, and when Danny asks for something, he helps him get it. But it's not illegal. And so he ended up getting charged last week, but not with that. He got charged with a kind of a separate, it's connected, but it's a offshoot of the same investigation where he was talking to a high-ranking Chicago public schools executive trying to get a contract, like a billion-dollar janitorial contract, a company that he represented.
Now, you've talked to him, and I commend you for letting Mr. Caldero have his say. You quoted him. You mentioned that, and again, that, you know, he's only been charged, and you let the man have his say, and I thought that was pretty fair treatment. I mean,
I appreciate a guy who, when he picks up the phone, he tells you what he's thinking, and he speaks his mind and doesn't give you a no comment or hang up on you. Reporters appreciate that. For sure. And he he's a little bit flabbergasted at why he's in trouble, because there's a guy who's been around City Hall since the 70s and has seen a lot of things happen that never got charged. He's kind of wondering, why am I charged with bribery? One of the charges is that he was arranging to get champagne for what he says was a baby shower for a friend. He said it wasn't even champagne. The indictment says champagne. He said it was a $12 bottle of like Prosecco or something. And he sees the millions of dollars in campaign donations going to other people, and he's wondering why did that get charged with bribery?
And why does I've always wondered, and so have readers of the column and listeners to this podcast, and even Jeff asks about it. Why did so many people get indicted in Chicago corruption, but never a Chicago mayor investigated? How does that, is there a special zone, like a free fairy dust of truth that's sprinkled all over the fifth floor of City Hall?
The fifth floor, yeah, must have some kind of like special protection, but it's never happened.
Now,
I remember.
Go on.
Oh, well, we were talking back when I was your leg man 10 years ago. It was how come, Mike Madigan has never really come under their crosshairs when he's got the real power. It was when Blagojevich was going down, and everybody was acting like Blagojevich was the most powerful politician that they've ever taken down. And I remember you saying, like, wait a second, he's not exactly all powerful. He was made, basically. So now we have Mike Madigan himself under investigation and possibly facing some kind of indictment in the future, although he has not been charged yet.
He has not been charged, and he insists that he has done nothing wrong. And although I have to say, you didn't do anything wrong, but somehow some people think you did, because you got bounced out of that speakership, Mr. Madigan, you held for 40 years.
And Madigan's definition of wrong, John, is vastly different than from the rest of us.
I think it's a technical definition, right? Yes. He's very careful about what he does. He walks up to the line, they say about him, and never crosses it. Although I don't think you need you don't need a flashing sign over his head saying "man of supreme influence," if you're in business in Chicago or in Illinois. But that brings us back to Caldero. He also, as Jason noted, was very careful about what he did, or at least he learned the ropes and saw people. He saw the opponents of Richard M. Daley, mostly black alderman, get indicted in Operation Silver Shovel for basically daring to ask this question of City Hall. You know what the question was, guys? Where's mine? Where's my piece? And immediately in those days, the U.S. Justice Department, which apparently thought that nothing happened in 20 years on the fifth floor, went after these low-hanging fruit aldermen and put them in jail. One of them was Cliff Kelly, the radio host. And now I see Caldero. He's kind of stuck, isn't he, Jason? He's stuck.
He seemed to think he was in the clear. I talked to him last year when the CPS executive was charged, and it was clear, although Caldero wasn't named, it was clear to me at least, he was the individual A in the indictment. So I called him, and he said, "I've never been approached. They've never asked me." He did say he got asked to cooperate early on in the Solis thing, and he told him, "I have nothing to cooperate on. Basically, I didn't do anything wrong." So he seemed a little surprised last week when the charges came down, but it has been a long time coming. I mean, this is 2016 when the whole Solis thing was happening, and then Solis flipped and started recording everybody else. So it's an interesting piece to a larger, much larger investigation that's still ongoing.
Yes, I'm glad you make mention of that. If we can go back to that day outside the I don't know the name of the massage parlor. I think it would be called Happy Endings.
I'm sure that name's taken.
It's no longer there, I can tell you that much.
But, you know, it's on Milwaukee and North Avenue, right?
It's like Milwaukee, just south of Division, I think is where it was. It had already been in the news. This is an aside, but the owner filed a lawsuit alleging that Chicago cops raided the parlor, and it was caught on tape where they were saying, like, you know, "We're going to send you back, put you in a box and ship you back to where you came from," or something like that. She filed a lawsuit that settled. But it's the same massage parlor where the FBI was staked out, allegedly watching Caldero and an unidentified gentleman and Danny Solis get out of the car and go in one night for this massage that Caldero had arranged.
For those of you who don't know Jason Meisner, although I do, you have to understand this. Jason is a reporter covering the federal courts and does not engage in speculation. But, you know, when you have a friend, you understand how to read what they're saying. And can you replay that, Jeff, what he just said there? There was an unidentified man with Danny Solis. And I think if I'm not mistaken, Jason, in the affidavit, or at least in the reports of the affidavit that I read, from the FBI on the blue Viagra and Danny Solis saying, "I like Asian girls. I want the Viagra, please." Yes. There was a mention of an individual B. Now, that individual has never been identified, correct?
Yep, not identified, not charged.
Because what's there to, I mean, how do you charge somebody with going to a massage parlor that's legal, you know, right? It's legal to go to a massage parlor. I've never been to one, and I know what would happen if I did. There's a ball-peen hammer in Betty's nightstand. I don't know why it's there, but I assume it would be used. Okay, you guys didn't think that was funny? That was kind of stupid. I shouldn't have said that.
Sorry.
All right, so...
Yeah.
No, but it's okay, John. I've got a hatchet next to the bed on my side, so...
It's just that I just think it's pathetic, and no offense to those of you who like to go to those places, but I always thought that sad little men taking blue pills under great stress and engaging in some kind of sordid fantasy is I'd rather grow tomatoes. Okay.
Yeah, I'll tell you the greatest irony there is that most of these people are supposed to be great communicators, i.e., politicians, and this is what they're left with. Just saying.
Well, that's how they right. Anyway, so let's get back to this now. I'm going to ask if I may, just to relieve the pressure from.
Ooh, hey, too soon.
Hello?
Yeah.
If I may relieve the pressure from Jason for a second and switch to Jeff. Okay. You know, can you get Beavis and Butthead? Can you get your minds out of it? So, Jeff.
Yes.
I'm going to ask you a question. Did you know that, and I wrote about it in my column over the weekend on who brought the Viagra to Alderman Viagra. Did you know who the Caldero, Mr. Caldero, worked for and was close to for many, many years before he switched alliances to Alderman Solis?
No, that's beyond my understanding.
He came up as a Louis Gutierrez guy.
Oh, Louis.
And I have not heard one word from Louis since the whole Viagra thing came out.
Yeah, he disappeared. El Gato, right? Didn't he call himself the rooster?
El Gallo.
El Gallo. Oh, my bad. Sorry, El Gato is the cat. That's my cat. That's been.
I think it was El Gallito, which is the little Gallito, rooster.
Little rooster, yes.
Yes, perfect. And I remember when we lived in Logan Square that we'd wake up to the sounds of roosters. We didn't need an alarm clock, you know?
Roosters. It's not that way now, but now they're hipsters, not out of necessity.
Right. So, Jeff, is it possible that individual B who's never been identified could be Louis Gutierrez? Not that there's anything wrong with it, but...
Right, absolutely. You know, CYA. I would say that the quick haste at which his seat was abandoned and then quickly shifted to a friendly, if you will, mm-hmm. would indicate, yes, that is probably accurate.
Well, we don't know, but what we do know is now we stick to the facts. We can ask Jason Meisner, well, what would be the relevant question now, Jason, that I've given you time?
Well, I can tell you what we do know is that the feds were investigating. They had wires up. They were watching. When Caldero told Solis, I'll meet you at the massage parlor, I just got to pick up blank at the airport. He's coming in.
Individual
and I'm going to get the same girl that he likes for you. And then he picks him up at the airport. And they go to the massage parlor, and the FBI is sitting in a van outside watching this whole thing go down. So that's what we know. Caldero's never been charged with that, anything related to that. And individual B has never been identified or charged. So.
And also, we have to say that how many, if you think of the, you've done so many stories on this. I need all of you to, who are listening to, you just Google Jason Meisner and Chicago Tribune and corruption or crime. You'll see who I think is the best by far criminal reporter in the city of Chicago. You can find him at JMETR22B. So it's JMETR22B. I don't understand why you picked that, but it's
I don't remember picking it. It was, yeah.
But you can find him
there. It
was
back in the day when I thought Twitter. I'm never going to do Twitter, so what does it matter what my Twitter is?
Right. Well, in all those stories you've done on this investigation, which is still continuing, has it ever been estimated how many thousands of calls Solis was monitored on?
We don't know. Because he's never been, we know about Burke, and I can't remember the number, but I did report it because they number the calls. Mm-hmm. Now, that doesn't mean that every single call, of course, probably only a small percentage are pertinent to the investigation.
Right.
If it's Burke calling his wife saying, do you need me to pick up the dry cleaning? That's counted as a number in the number of calls. But Burke, it was like, you know, 10,000 or something like that. It was a crazy high number just for the time that they were up and listening to his calls. For Solis, we don't know even what that number is because he's never publicly been charged. Although Burke's lawyers revealed in court documents that he's got a deferred prosecution agreement, Solis does, with the government, meaning he's been charged under seal and it's all going to go away if he cooperates. So we don't know, but, you know, it just from the affidavit that came out, It's a lot of calls. I mean, he was talking to a lot of different people, and then that led to them recording others. So,
right,
it's thousands, I'm guessing.
Now, one of the obligations of your craft and the way you practice it is you don't speculate. But as a columnist, I'm allowed a little bit of that freedom, and I would say, as I said the other day, I know that I would just assume that Louis Gutierrez and Rahm Emanuel, former mayor, who was close to Danny Solis, are on some of those conversations. Whether Rahm is asking Danny Solis to pick up the dry cleaning, that may be. But I would think that if you're Rahm or Louis, you've got to think, oh, when you heard about this, you got to think, oh, geez, what did I say? Right? That's
right. And one of the other one thing I can say that surprised people was just the level of not unsophistication, but just not being careful. I mean, Burr famously careful. At least he had a reputation of being careful. We've only heard or seen a small snippet of what he was talking about, but this is on a cell phone, committing crimes, allegedly, not being careful at all. So, and Danny, doing the same thing. And so you can only imagine how many different people they were talking to during that time frame, which was months or even, years. If they were talking that cavalierly in the quotes we've seen so far, then it just can't be good for them.
Stark contrast to Madigan's reign, that's for sure.
Well, I don't think, first of all, I want a true confession here, because this is True Confessions. I'm probably on some of those calls with Danny Solis, and I can tell you that maybe I said something vulgar, but I did not say anything criminal or anything about massage parlors.
I think there's a lot of people in that boat. Like, we were talking bluntly, but not,
Right. But then, gentlemen, I asked both of you, Jeff and Jason, you talked about the precision and the care, being cautious, like Burke has legendarily done, or we thought he did, until he starts piping up, did we land the tuna? Did we land the tuna? Which I think that kind of is the hook in the fish's mouth, and it's wiggling. But
I always said on that, I always thought on that, what the hell, or how out of touch with where you are you? If he had said pike or trout or a whole litany of other Midwestern fish, he might have been okay.
But the real tuna, and the real tuna, as we know, the white tuna, the pinkish white tuna.
Green tuna, John. It's green tuna.
Green?
For money.
Oh, I'm thinking the pink tuna with the white flesh and perfectly, I'm sure, sweet to the federal government, prosecutors, and the FBI, is Michael Madigan.
The tuna.
And he does... Guys, he didn't. He wasn't that cautious or careful when he just installed his replacement in Springfield, and then turned around 48 hours later and said, "Please resign. You suck. You've done something terrible." And I'm sure that'll come out in a news story. But I don't think that I talked to Jason. I talked to people who know Mike, and that I talked to people who. A lot of people who know people, and they also said that business of Madigan putting in someone that he hadn't really vetted tells you there's an instability there right now and an exhaustion level, which is understandable if you're under siege from those warrior monks from the FBI criminal, corruption squad, and sooner or later you make a mistake, and that's what I guess.
Yeah, with all due respect, the Don was slipping. Reminds me of that quote 10 years ago. Would that have happened?
That is so...
I think he's definitely distracted. Put it that way. He's got a lot. That's been his whole regime was pretty rock solid up until a few years ago when that It started with the sexual harassment scandal, forced some of his people out. He never really got a handle on that. There was, and this is politics, I cover crime, but, you know, the rebellion kind of started there. And then there is, it was one domino after another after that. It was 2019 when we started reporting that he was, you know, his operation was under criminal investigation. So, yeah, this this issue with installing the 26-year-old as his replacement. And then I don't think it's come out. I haven't seen it. I don't think it's come out what this alleged wrongdoing was. But
no,
it will.
Not as, you know, as of this taping.
It will.
Yeah.
The point being that they can all say, oh, well, he's, it doesn't matter because we got rid of him. But it will. I guess the thing that strikes me about Madigan as the centerpiece to all this is that for years and years, as Jason noted at the beginning of this conversation, the federal government had avoided the big fish. They went after governors like Blagojevich, who was a total fool and a puppet. You know, he didn't even know. He was like playing with broken toys in the corner, drooling. He didn't understand what he had. And now they're going, it looks like they're going after Madigan, Jason. And that seemed, what happened in the, among the G, among the feds, to make them actually think that they could go after somebody like that? Was it William Barr being in the attorney general's office? What was it?
No, I don't think so, because this started before that. But, you know, it kind of accelerated, for sure. They have a, they put together a really tough corruption squad from the FBI on up to the prosecutor's office, led by Amr Bachu, who you know.
Yeah, I know.
Going back to the Hanhart. I mean, he was a mob prosecutor, and then he's gone on to public corruption. And his reputation is he's a bulldog, and he doesn't play the usual game where it's kind of cozy. This is all stuff I hear on the background. He does not play that game where, come in, let's talk, bring your guy in, maybe we can work something out. He does the opposite. Hides his cards, charges hard, and a lot of people are surprised, actually, behind the scenes that this has gone this far. But they, at some point, they made the leap to the ultimate tuna, if you will, in Illinois politics, which is Madigan. And he's, so far, we haven't seen much, unlike Burke and Solis, who were caught on tape saying, you know, all these things. There's only one direct conversation that we know of in this investigation between Madigan and somebody who's is charged, which is his longtime confidant, Mike McClain. But they were talking about appointing somebody to the ComEd board, Juan Ochoa. So far, we have not seen that quid pro quo that everybody talks about. You know, you're never going to get Madigan saying, I'll give you this if you give me this. But, if, you know, what they have that we haven't seen, we don't know. All we know is that behind the scenes, most people expect eventually there's going to be an indictment brought that's going to kind of shed some light on the situation.
I'm really glad that you brought up the Bachu, who's a tremendous prosecutor. I remember him with the mob trials, like Big Mikey Sarno and all that, putting these guys away. And I just think that attitude of we're taking no prisoners. He's not trying to leverage this federal gig for some sort of cushy chairman, you know, being on the board of a large law firm. You know, he's not doing that. He's actually a public servant. And those investigators, you know, there are many of them. It's of a varied, it's a diverse group. But I have to say that the two of them, you know, remind me of Irish monk warrior priests, you know. And I just think that, and they and the Postal Service guys and the IRS guys, they're all working hard on this stuff. And you can see how many I can't even count how many indictments this has brought.
Yeah, and three fresh ones last week. Eddie Acevedo and his sons, and then Roberto Caldero. You can see what they're doing. I mean, Acevedo was tax charges. Very straightforward. Didn't pay tax or filed false tax returns, allegedly, involving payments to his company, Apex, I believe it is, but related to the ComEd thing. He's not charged directly with taking bribes, facilitating bribes, or anything directly involved with Mike Madigan, but that's the way they do it. Imagine at some point he was approached and said, get on the bus, as you like to say, or else we got you. I mean, it's like black and white right here. And he must have said no, because they indicted him last week.
But his sons are also with him.
And that gives him more power, more leverage, at least. You know, it's not just you, it's your family.
Guys, I would suggest, guys, that in the past, when you'd get somebody close to Madigan, would be a central domino, that with the political order in place, there were calculations in the minds of those guys, you know, being the federal bus pulls up and you either get on or you get off. And if you get off, you wait for indictment. But they would calculate that. Well, all right, I could maybe do a year or two, but the political structure is in place to reward those who keep their mouth shut. And now,
right,
the difference is, and that there is no, the political structure is broken, and there are no people to take care of you if you keep your mouth shut. Wow, yep. did I say something stupid?
No,
I'm not sure.
How do you follow that? You're right, John. Jeez. I mean,
well, you think of the mob. You don't want to liken Illinois politics to the outfit, but that's the same thing, isn't it? Where you keep your mouth, but when that broke down, when the bosses went away and there was nobody running the show who could reward you, everybody started to flip because they know there's nothing to fall back on.
And even more importantly, there is no one to protect you in the in these offices that are now investigating. I mean, we know the Chicago way more better than anybody. And then I'm certain that somebody knew somebody who somebody sent.
Well, that's the point. And if there's nobody there to pick you up, you know, I'll just give you a hypothetical. Let's say I was hypothetically in charge of a mayor's patronage operation, and I got sent away for breaking the law, and they held a pizza party for me at, say, like, just hypothetically, at the neighborhood church, and the priest compared me to Jesus Christ, who had his legal problems too, and everybody was supposed to protect him, and he does his whatever bit he does, and then, you know what, they're friends when you come out of college, right, to help you with your postgraduate education.
Sure.
But now, if Madigan's no longer the chairman, I'm not saying Madigan did any of that or would do any of that, but now that Madigan's no longer the speaker and the chairman of the party, and you've got all these different factions in Democratic identity politics, you know, under that big tent, they'll be squabbling for this job and that job and all sorts of things. There's no focus to, like, let's say, we must reward one of our loyal, you know, warriors who is coming back from a long voyage in the Federal Gray Bar Hotel. There's nobody like that to do that, I'm thinking.
Yeah.
Jason, that where does that quote come from, the Don, by all due respect? Was that... when you said the Don is slipping, no, could anyone have come to him? I think that's the Turk, Salazzo, right?
That's the Turk talking to Tom Hagen after they hit veto.
We're just trying to help Jeff, you know, when he does his searches. Now, before we go, I have to also ask Jason about other crimes that are committed. Now, I'm looking out over a beautiful fog-drenched Chicago. The temperature's rising. Dibs are done. Get your damn dib stuff off the street, because it's the snow's melting, okay? And I'm Judge Dibs, and I said it. Get it off the street. But what happened when the temperature began rising, an odd thing happening. More and more carjackings, Jason. More and more carjackings. There's violence.
They solved those.
They solved some, right?
Right.
And violence at the London House Hotel and all sorts of things. People getting shot as the temperature goes up. You did an important story about the feds having to go in on carjacking cases. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, the carjackings were on the rise in 2018, 17, 18. Tribune, my colleague Jeremy Gorner, did a story on the numbers, and at the time they seemed like they were spiking pretty bad. It's actually nothing like we've seen over the last 6 months. But so amid that news, the feds came in and formed a task force to work with Chicago police and try to figure out which cases it makes sense to charge federally, because you get them charged in federal court, and they're not part of that kind of revolving Cook County door. Some that doesn't seem like much of a problem for some of these guys. Sometimes they can get long sentences, 8, 10, 12 years in Yankton, South Dakota, not some local prison or jail. So they started charging some. It hasn't been a ton. And the story I did was kind of looking at, well, why don't they charge more? Can they do more? And there's some issues with federal statutes and things you have to prove where they can't take every case, certainly, and not even a big percentage of them. And the other big problem is juveniles. Feds don't charge juveniles. There's no U.S. Bureau of Prisons that houses juveniles. So when you've got 13, 14, 15-year-old kids committing these crimes, there's not much they're going to do there other than assist Chicago police in their investigation. So that's they're plugging away. The cases I looked at have resulted in big sentences. I think the average was 9.5 years for anybody charged with carjacking in federal court. So big number. I don't know how much of an effect it's having, though.
And also, there's another story. I'm sorry, I'm just a font of Jason Meisner information today. There's another story that I think expresses the nature of the criminal Chicago. And that is, you did a story on a guy, sounds to me like a total gangbanger, who refused to testify. He got shot in a home invasion and refused to testify against those who shot him, and received, I think, 2.5 years in federal prison?
The judge ended up giving him time served. It was just under 2 years, and then a long term of supervised release. So, Deshaun Danzler.
I'm sorry, Deshaun Danzler. 2 years in prison for contempt of court, with time considered served. So really, no real pain.
They threw him in jail after he. Yeah.
What does this tell us?
It was a really unusual situation. To me, yeah, like you said, it was kind of like a microcosm of the difficulties, what's going on in the street and in court, law enforcement trying to solve some of these. It was a federal grand jury investigating a really violent gang faction called Evans Mob on the South Side. And in 2015, Deshaun Danzler, there was a knock on his door. He was shot in the face. He was shot 3 times and survived. Meanwhile, his neighbor, who was a total innocent bystander, was murdered. Deshaun Danzler's in the hospital the next day, tells police, "I didn't see who shot me." And then, this is the most amazing part to me, it proceeds to get a phone call from the shooter, who was taunting him, saying, you're fast, man, I missed you. basically. And then he's talking, Deshaun Danzler later talked to his brother, who's in Cook County Jail, so recorded, where they're identifying the shooter. So the feds hauled him in to the grand jury and said, you know, you've been given immunity. You can't be prosecuted. You have to tell us, testify who the shooter was. And he said, no. And Judge Castillo, the chief judge, the federal judge at the time, warned him, you know, you can be charged with contempt. I've granted you immunity. And he still said no. And so he was charged with contempt and jailed. And he stayed in jail for 2 years and ended up pleading guilty and was sentenced last week by Judge Ronald Guzman.
But he did. He was just given time served. He could have been given. He could have been given a longer sentence, right? I mean, look. Yeah. Here's me. The
12 and a half years, right, Jason?
Yeah.
Yeah. Contempt is a very weird charge where the guidelines are. You know, it's an unusual situation. So he could have been given, because of his criminal history. Could have been given a huge sentence, and the judge was leaning. It sounded like he was leaning that way. You know how judges love to give the speech, where it makes it sound like they're going to launch somebody, and then comes the butt. And he was saying the judge was saying the guidelines aren't high enough. This is a horrible. This is the kind of situation that is the reason why law enforcement can't break the cycle of violence, and it's this code of the streets and all that, and then. He decided to give him one more chance. He called it a gift, and gave him time served.
That it's always the lecture, you know, the big talk, the big speech, just like on TV, like, which is why I don't watch crime shows for the same reason I don't watch journalism shows. You know, to me, they're all bullshit. But the big speech, the big talk, and then the butt. Now, what I hear from the from the old-timer outfit guys, is that they're terrified of the feds. And they have been ever since Joey Lombardo lost his teeth down there in the, wherever it is, 40 stories below ground in the Supermax in Colorado, where you don't see the sunlight and you get isolated from anybody. And you go crazy and your teeth fall out. That's, I think, that Judge Guzman, to me, had a opportunity to send him to that kind of place and didn't. What does that tell us?
Yeah, I don't know. He is in prison for state crimes, aggravated battery, where he got 9 years. So I think that factored in. He wasn't going to go anywhere. But, yeah, if you're going to try to send a message, I don't know if that if time served does it. But Deshaun Danzler, I mean, he talk about giving him a gift because this guy, his criminal background was he's in a Category 5, which the judge said is like, usually reserved for like the most, usually it takes years to get to a number 5, and he's only 26. So
it takes hard work to get that kind of, people think that it's easy to go to prison. It's not. It takes hard work.
No.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah. Like that's some fast work to get to a criminal history 5 in federal court when you're 26.
It's that's all-star. He's an all-star.
Hall of Fame.
Hall of Fame.
Yeah. I just found it, the fact that the killer called him and taunted him over his own shooting, and then he still refuses to testify. Kind of says all there is to say about the situation on the street level.
Well, I hate to speak up for Mr. Danzler, since he's a Category 5 thug with a long violent criminal record, but he's in state prison. If he says one word, if you become a snitch, you're dead. He's probably, there's wars going on in prison all the time. Who knows who's getting killed and what orders are being sent in the criminal underworld out into the city. But I leave you with, I'm wondering what, like, think of somebody like Jimmy Marcello, the mob boss from the West suburbs. that his lawyers, Martin, I never forget, they put the shamrock next to his name on a screen saying, well, he was only half Italian, so he couldn't have been a mob boss. And now he's, I think he's in that, and all the others who are in that, who went to that place below ground where you don't see the sun, that message is out, you know, all over the place, and nobody wants to go there. But you have to send people there to let them know. Anyway, Jason Meisner, I would say one of the premier cooking reporters in Chicago, with the excellent Louisville wings recipe that my sons made for Super Bowl. So thank you very much.
Yeah.
Yeah. And well, we can't wait to have you back on the Chicago way. Thanks for being here, buddy.
Thanks for having me on. It's going to be a busy few weeks coming up, so I'm sure I'll be back.
Well, we'd love to see that. Thanks.
And if you do, you have to check out the story about the military-grade weapons found in Chicago, if you're interested, that Jason had earlier last week as well.
The guy with the arsenal.
Right. Yeah, check that one out.
Yeah, and his Addison basement vault.
Yeah, so check out Jason's Twitter to find that story. Very much worth your time.
All right.
Thanks, Jason.
Thanks, Jason.
Thanks a lot.
See you, buddy. He's the best. For Jason Meisner, excellent federal beat reporter for the Chicago Tribune. I think one of the best, if not the best, crime reporter in the city of Chicago. And my friend and also former leg man. And for Jeff Carlin, executive producer at WGN Radio, who I've just introduced to a new sensation on YouTube called French Guy Cooks.
Can't wait.
We'll talk about that another time. Maybe we can even have him on from France.
For France.
Thanks for joining us on this edition of the Chicago Way. And remember, if you like what you see, if you like, not see, you're listening, okay? I'm an idiot. If you like what you hear, subscribe. Subscribe on iTunes, on any of the other places, Spotify, all the other platforms carry this podcast. Tell your friends. And if it's iTunes, give us a great review, okay? I can't provide you with asphalt contracts. I was told I couldn't do that. I can't really give you a trucking contract for trucks that don't have engines. Although I don't know why that happened in Chicago, but nobody got indicted for that. And I can't really take care of you except to thank you for being here on another edition of the Chicago Way podcast on WGN+.